Welcome to the Verity Podcast for Wednesday, April 3rd, 2024, where we separate the spin from the facts. I'm Scott Wallace.
And I'm Eric Steiner. Here's a look at today's top stories. Seven World Central KitchenAid workers are killed by the Israeli military in Gaza.
Israeli strikes in Damascus kill seven high-ranking Iranian officials.
The Democratic Republic of Congo names its first female prime minister.
Florida Supreme Court puts abortion rights to vote.
Trump posts a $175 million bond in his New York fraud case.
A judge refuses to dismiss Hunter Biden's tax evasion case.
A Finland school shooting leaves one dead.
Dozens are killed in an Istanbul nightclub fire.
Google agrees to delete billions of incognito tracking records.
And the UK raises its minimum wage by 9.8%.
In our top story, news from Gaza as Israeli strikes kill seven World Central kitchen workers. And here are the facts as agreed upon by the Times of Israel, Al Jazeera, Axios, and Reuters. Seven World Central Kitchen, or WCK, staffers were killed on Monday after the Israeli military fired on an aid convoy belonging to the organization, allegedly believing an armed terrorist was among the group. Haaretz reported that an Israeli drone fired three missiles at the convoy, with the first missile stopping the convoy and the second two hitting two other cars shortly after. Israeli forces claim they spotted an armed person riding on a truck alongside WCK cars entering an aid facility before the convoy set out. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said that the attack was unintended and, quote, tragic, pledging that Israel would conduct an independent inquiry. The attack killed Australian, UK, and Polish citizens, as well as a dual U.S.-Canadian citizen and Palestinians assisting the convoy. The WCK said that it had coordinated its movements with the Israeli military. The UAE, which backed the WCK's initiative to get food into Gaza, paused the project until it receives assurance from Israel that aid workers in the enclave will be protected. Another aid organization, ANERA, announced on Tuesday that it too would be pausing its operations in Gaza due to concerns over its staff safety. In its statement, ANERA accused Israel of demonstrating a pattern of targeting humanitarian aid workers. The attack on the WCK convoy comes as negotiations over a hostage release and temporary truce in Gaza resumed again in Cairo this week, though no progress has been reported so far. Hamas was reportedly not expected at the talks.
All right, on this program, we separate the spin from the facts. Eric laid out the facts on this tragedy for us. And now for the resulting spin, starting with the pro-establishment narrative from Politico. Due to the complicated nature of unfortunate incidents like this one, Israel must conduct a thorough investigation to maintain its moral high ground and demonstrate that it's serious about ending this war. The U.S. has proudly stood by Israel in its war against Hamas terrorist forces. However, with every passing day that a temporary ceasefire is not in effect, Israel loses the strategic gains it has made and isolates itself on the international stage.
We follow that with a pro-Israel narrative coming from Jerusalem Post. This tragic security incident was an unfortunate reminder of one of the many difficulties Israel is facing. Israel has never and will never intentionally target civilians. And to demonstrate its commitment to its principles, Israel will conduct a thorough investigation into the incident. The international community, even as it essentially forgets Hamas's October 7th atrocities, must remember that Israel did not want this war, and it has been forced to take a dramatic action to ensure its survival.
The pro-Palestine narrative comes from Middle East Eye. Israel has committed yet another terrible massacre in Gaza, only to be greeted with calls for an investigation and restraint. There already is more than enough evidence to suggest that Israeli forces have consistently targeted civilians, even foreign citizens, in the country's campaign to starve the people of Gaza into submission. Indeed, this massacre is another reminder of the lack of accountability Israel faces as it mercilessly continues its brutal war against Palestinians.
Metaculus has a nerd narrative saying there's a 70% chance that Israel will have de facto power in the Gaza Strip on January 1st, 2025.
Sad as this is, I'm almost surprised things like this don't happen more often. You're driving a convoy in a war zone. Jeez, those are some brave people.
Who says it doesn't?
Oh, you know what? You know what? And another deadly incident as Israel kills seven high-ranking Iranian officials in a Damascus strike. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Axios, the Financial Times, the Guardian, the New York Times, and Reuters. After an alleged Israeli strike in Damascus on Monday killed two Iranian generals and five other military advisors at the Iranian embassy compound in Damascus, Iranian Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei vowed on Tuesday that Iran would retaliate. In addition to killing three senior commanders of Iran's Quds Force, the Expeditionary Military and Intelligence Service of Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, Iran said the strike killed General Mohammad Reza Zahedi, who was said to manage Iran's military relations in Syria and Lebanon. Zahedi's killing is the most high-profile Iranian military figure to be assassinated since the killing of Quds Force Commander General Qassem Soleimani by the U.S. in 2020. He allegedly was pivotal in supplying Lebanese Hezbollah with weapons and was under U.S. sanctions. Axios reported that a U.S. official said that the U.S. had informed Iran that it had no involvement or advance knowledge of the strike. Israeli and U.S. officials said that Israel notified the U.S. only a few minutes before the strike was conducted and did not ask for a green light to launch the attack, though this cannot be verified. The war in Gaza has intensified simmering regional tensions between Israel, the U.S., and Iran. Hezbollah and Israel have exchanged fire across the Lebanese border since Hamas's October 7th attack against Israel, with other Iranian-backed or aligned groups expanding their attacks against U.S. forces in Iraq and Syria. The Houthis have also attacked merchant ships in the Red Sea. Indirect talks between the U.S. and Iran to de-escalate hostilities have reportedly been held, though the details of these discussions are not clear. The U.S. has also reportedly worked through a diplomatic solution on the Lebanese border, though little progress has been reported.
Thanks, Scott. The spins begin with a pro-establishment narrative coming from CNN. The U.S. is doing everything it can to ensure that Israel deter military threats while also preventing regional escalation. Israel must be able to defend itself from terrorist attacks, whether from Gaza or elsewhere, and the U.S. will always defend Israel's right to security. Nonetheless, it is not in the U.S. or Israel's best interest to see the conflict escalate. Thankfully, Iran has limited options in terms of how it can retaliate, and ultimately, serious escalation is unlikely.
Pro-Israel narrative spin comes from Jerusalem Post. Israel has made clear time and again that it will not tolerate Iranian-backed terrorists operating near its borders. Iran is playing a dangerous game through its attempts to destabilize the region, and Israel must deter Iran from believing that it can gain anything from this war. Regardless of the UN's campaign to demonize Israel, Israel never wanted this war and has been forced to respond to a terrible situation. However, it will aggressively pursue its interests to ensure the security of its citizens.
Al-Maidin has the pro-Palestine narrative. While Israel violates international law every day with its crimes in Gaza, Lebanon, Syria, and Iraq, the resistance is preparing to respond. Zahedi was a hero and now a martyr after years of working toward liberating the region from Western imperial influence. Though Iran has not been directly involved in this war, it has kept a watchful eye on its allies as they confront Israel's aggression.
And a nerd narrative from Attaculous predicting a 10% chance that a state-based conflict between Israel and Iran will cause at least 1,000 deaths before 2025.
The Democratic Republic of Congo names its first female prime minister. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Associated Press, Nation, BBC News, France 24, Business Insider, and Al Jazeera. Former Planning Minister Judith Suminwa Tuluka on Monday was selected as the first female prime minister in the history of the Democratic Republic of Congo, or DRC, by President Felix Tshisekedi. This comes after former Prime Minister Jean-Michel Sama Lukonde resigned in February as legally required after he became a member of parliament. The appointment of a new prime minister had been on hold until the ruling Union for Democracy and Social Progress Party could beat out 44 other parties for a majority position in the National Assembly. Previously, Tshisekedi secured re-election late last year in a vote the opposition denounced as rigged, with parties supporting him winning more than 90% of the parliamentary seats. Although the DRC has its first female prime minister, it doesn't rank among the Inter-Parliamentary Union's top 10 African countries in terms of gender equality in politics. The DRC, one of the world's poorest nations, has seen 7 million people internally displaced by a worsening security situation particularly in the North Kivu province, where the M23 rebel group has seized territories over the past 2 years.
The Rwandan brings us narrative A. This appointment ushers in a new era in the governance of the DRC. With this decision, Tshisekedi has further demonstrated his commitment to gender equality and positive masculinity.
Narrative B comes from the Great Lakes Eye. As he starts his second term in office, Tshisekedi is using the gender equality agenda to divert public attention from his failure to make good on his promise to fight corruption and embezzlement. This appointment is merely a PR stunt.
And a nerd narrative from Attaculous, there's a 50% chance that the Democratic Republic of the Congo will experience a successful coup d'etat before January 1st, 2040. Florida Supreme Court puts an abortion ban on the ballot. And here are the facts as agreed upon by the New Republic, the New York Times, the Times, Guardian, and the Politico. The conservative-leaning Florida Supreme Court on Monday upheld the state's ban on abortion at 15 weeks of pregnancy, but also allowed voters to reinstate it via a ballot initiative in November. The judges overturned a 1989 ruling granting abortion rights through the second trimester of pregnancy. Nearly 10,000 women who had abortions in 2023 were from outside the state. The court's decision also makes it possible to enact a separate 6-week abortion ban signed into law by Governor Ron DeSantis last year to take effect. In a 4-3 ruling, the court also allowed voters to decide on expanding abortion access to up to approximately 24 weeks via a proposed constitutional amendment. With the 6-week abortion ban going into effect, abortion access will be restricted across the southern U.S. North Carolina and South Carolina have already passed laws banning abortion at 12 and 6 weeks, respectively.
Scott, thanks for the facts. The first spin is coming from USA Today, and it's the Democratic narrative. The Florida Supreme Court's decision to uphold Ron DeSantis' 6-week abortion ban, along with its approval of a ballot amendment protecting abortion rights, puts Republican presidential favorite Donald Trump in a bind. He must choose between alienating voters, while DeSantis' own political maneuvers could also potentially affect the presidential race.
Roll call brings us the Republican narrative. Florida Democrats are rallying behind the ballot initiative approved by the state Supreme Court, but Floridians, in general, are for reasonable abortion limits. Those opposed to a nuanced and reasonable point of view taking into account Florida voters are actually extreme. Compromises with such extremism must be condemned and avoided over and above the court's approval of the abortion ban.
Narrative C comes from Slate. The Florida Supreme Court has ignited a political firestorm for the upcoming election by overturning decades of precedent. Its contentious rulings underscore a deep political culture war that even transcends the abortion issue. Florida's electorate now faces a pivotal decision that will shape the state's future trajectory.
And Metaculus brings another nerd narrative predicting a 3% chance that elective abortion will be banned nationally in the U.S. before 2030.
Donald Trump posts a $175 million bond in the New York fraud case. Here are the facts as agreed upon the New York State Supreme Court, the Associated Press, BBC News, Forbes, and Financial Times. Former President Donald Trump has posted a $175 million bond underwritten by Knight Specialty Insurance related to his appeal of the New York civil fraud judgment against him. Trump in February was found guilty of overstating the value of his assets to loan and insurance companies to secure financial agreements. He has denied the allegations, with the bond pausing the seizure of $465 million in penalties as a guarantee of payment while he appeals. New York Supreme Court had ruled the bond to be priced at $465 million, but that was reduced on March 25th by an appellate court. Trump and his co-defendants were given 10 days for the bond to be secured post-appeal. Without a posted bond, New York Attorney General Letitia James had threatened to seize property and freeze bank accounts. Trump's legal team had argued within the appeal that a $465 million bond was impossible to secure. Trump owes $454 million, not including a 9% annual interest rate. It's believed he holds roughly $413 million in cash and liquid assets. In a separate case, he has posted a bond worth $92 million while he appeals an $83 million defamation judgment. These judgments coincide with Trump Media and Technology Group going public last week, Although the stock's price fell by approximately 20% Monday, the former president is estimated to have currently seen a $4 billion increase in net worth.
Thanks, Eric. The WLT report brings us the pro-Trump spin. Once again, Trump has struck a blow against the weaponized legal system. Despite the best attempts of the deep state, James won't be able to get her hands on Trump's assets. Trump is one step closer to overturning New York's ridiculous politicized ruling.
Follow that up with an anti-Trump narrative coming from CNN. It may not seem like it at first, but Trump posting a bond could help Democrats, who stood to lose more ground if Trump had had his assets seized. The former president also gains when he and his supporters feel he's been treated unfairly. Now there's one less thing he can complain about.
And the nerd narrative from Metaculus, there's a 52% chance that in a matchup against President Joe Biden, Trump would win the 2024 presidential election. The judge rejects Hunter Biden's dismissal request. And here are the facts as agreed upon by CBS 13 KRCG Missouri, Local 3 News Chattanooga, The Daily Caller, CNN, CBS, and Al Jazeera. A U.S. district judge on Monday refused to dismiss Hunter Biden's request to have his federal tax evasion case dropped. President Joe Biden's son is accused of failing to pay $1.4 million in taxes and could face up to 17 years in prison. Judge Mark Scarese sided with special counsel David Weiss's disagreement with Biden's argument that the indictments against him are politically motivated. In an 82-page order, Scarese rejected all of Hunter's 8 motions to dismiss the case, writing there was virtually no evidence to the theory that Weiss's office exhibited anti-Biden bias. Scarese also called the motion remarkable since it failed to include evidence. Previously, Biden's attorneys argued to dismiss the case due to a plea agreement reached in June 2023, but a Delaware district court judge threw the deal out of the court. Scarese said the agreement between Biden and federal prosecutors was never valid because a probation officer never signed it. The case is scheduled to begin in June with Biden looking to defend himself against 9 felony and misdemeanor tax charges. He also faces a June trial in Delaware for allegedly lying on a federal form to illegally buy a firearm. He's looking to have that case dismissed.
Scott, thank you for the facts. The first spin is a Republican narrative coming from the New York Post. Biden may be shocked that he wasn't able to use his privilege to have this case dismissed, but his weak attempt has fallen flat on his face. It's about time Biden is being held accountable for not paying his taxes, but there's still a strong chance the Democrat-sympathizing Justice Department will still do what it can to go easy on the president's son.
And Newsweek brings us the Democratic narrative. Whatever crimes or misdemeanors the younger Biden has committed, he's an adult and should have to face the music if found guilty. Republicans' attempts to tie Joe Biden to Hunter's missteps, though, are nothing but hypocritical conspiracy theories from the party backing multi-time indicted former President Donald Trump for the 2024 election.
The nerds from Metaculus say there's a 15% chance that Joe Biden will be impeached by the U.S. House of Representatives. Horrible news in Finland as a school shooting leaves one dead and a 12-year-old detained. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Guardian, Washington Post, Sky News, CNN, BBC News, and CBS. A 12-year-old suspect has been arrested for allegedly killing a child and critically injuring 2 others in a school shooting in Finland on Tuesday. Officers were called to the Viritola School in Vantaa, a suburb of Finland's capital, Helsinki, at around 9 a.m. local time. Before they arrested the suspect an hour later in the suburb of Siltamaki, the police had cordoned off the school building and asked locals to remain indoors. According to the police, the suspect, a student at the same school who fled on foot after the shooting, used a licensed handgun owned by a close relative. Since children under 15 are not criminally responsible in Finland, the suspect has been placed in the care of social services while he's being investigated for charges of murder and attempted murder. Following the deadly school shootings in 2007 and 2008, Finland tightened its gun legislation and raised the minimum age for firearms ownership. The Nordic nation of 5.6 million has more than 1.5 million licensed firearms holders.
Thanks, Eric, for those sobering facts. We have a narrative spin on this story, and it's narrative A coming from Reuters. Tuesday's tragedy should act as a wake-up call, allowing children to have licenses to use someone else's weapon or considering lowering the legal age to carry a firearm could spiral the world's happiest country into one where unacceptable youth gun violence is more prevalent.
The New York Times has narrative B. Due to strict gun laws, school shootings are extremely rare in a country of hunters and gun enthusiasts. As the motive isn't clear yet, it's too early to blame the Finnish gun owners for Tuesday's deeply upsetting shooting.
An Istanbul nightclub fire leaves dozens dead. Here are the facts on this story as agreed upon by BBC News, Washington Post, Daily Sabah, The New York Times, and The Guardian. A fire at the Masquerade Club in Istanbul, Turkey, a nightclub located in the basement of a high-rise, has left at least 29 dead and others injured. Local officials said the fire broke out during the day while the club was closed for renovations. Construction workers are reportedly among the dead. A reported 86 firefighting personnel and 31 vehicles responded to the scene, as well as police and medical personnel. Those injured were transferred to regional hospitals. The governor's office further stated that 6 people had been arrested in connection with the fire, including 2 partners in the club, 2 managers, a person in charge of the renovation, and an accountant. They said that while the club, which was closed for the month of Ramadan, didn't have a permit to continue construction, it did so anyway to prepare for next week's Eid holiday. Istanbul's chief prosecutor has launched an investigation into the fire, with the Minister of Internal Affairs also stating that it has launched its own probe with civil inspectors.
Scott, thank you for the facts. The first spin is narrative A coming from Forbes. While the cause of this fire is yet unclear, Turkish authorities are certainly leaving no stone unturned after detaining several people and issuing warrants for several others. It also appears the nightclub did not have the required permits to resume construction, so there's a good chance that people will be brought to justice.
And narrative B comes from Jacobin. Given Turkey's history of failed infrastructure, especially during the devastating earthquakes, it's not surprising that an unapproved construction project was systemically ignored. President Erdogan used to favor state intervention, but due to international pressure, he has deregulated the construction industry to the point of lethality.
Google says it will delete incognito tracking records. The facts are agreed upon by the Washington Post, BBC News, France 24, and the Hacker News. Lawyers for a class action settlement said in court papers filed on Monday that Google agreed to delete information it had gathered about people who used Chrome's incognito secret browsing mode. The agreement to delete billions of records aims to resolve a 2020 U.S. class action lawsuit that accused the internet giant of gathering user data even in, quote, private mode. Google supports the deal but challenges the $5 billion in damages as well as the claims. To determine whether to approve the settlement that would keep Google out of court in the class action lawsuit, Judge Yvonne Gonzalez-Rogers will hold a hearing on July 30th. If accepted, Chrome users who suffered harm can sue Google separately. After the two parties announced their intention to resolve the dispute, Google updated its user policy, clarifying that it still gathers data even when users search incognito mode. To strengthen security, Google has also started testing a function that would automatically block third-party cookies, which track user behavior for all Google Chrome users.
Thanks, Eric. We have a narrative A on this story, coming from Dark Reading. Google has infringed on users' privacy and intentionally deceived consumers. The tech giant has gathered enormous amounts of data from users who believe the company would keep their data safe. After that, the company used this information to track web traffic and sell ads, which made them billions of dollars. Google should pay for damages, not just for lying, but also for invading user privacy.
NPR Online News has narrative B. Google has long thought that the complaint was without merit. However, the tech leader is happy to resolve the issue and move on. Deleting outdated technical data that has never been utilized for customization is not an issue. The data was never connected with any individual, thus no harm was done. As a result, Google will not pay any damages to any of the plaintiffs.
And a nerd narrative from Metaculus, there's a 50% chance that Google will be supplanted as the top search engine in the U.S. by market share by July 2046.
Wait, what? There's an incognito mode? What?
Yeah, I don't know anything about that. Our final story, the U.K. raises its minimum wage by 9.8%. Here are the facts. as agreed upon by Al Jazeera, the UK government official website, Reuters, BBC News, and The Guardian. The UK government has increased the legal minimum wage from £10.42 to £11.44 an hour, a 9.8% rise and the largest single boost since 2001. The new national living wage applies to workers aged 21 and older, down from the previous minimum threshold of 23 and older. The minimum wage for 18 to 20-year-olds has also increased from £7.49 to £8.60 an hour, while apprentices aged 19 or over have received a boost from £5.28 to £6.40 an hour. The increase reportedly aims to address the gap between the lowest and highest earners. Starting in 2025, there are further plans to resume increasing wages in line with median earnings. According to Business and Trade Minister Kevin Hollenrake, the boost, worth £1,800 a year for full-time workers, will reportedly benefit 2.7 million people. However, the charity, the Living Wage Foundation, claims the real living wage is £12 an hour nationally and £13.15 in London.
Thanks, Scott, for those facts. The first spin is coming from Guardian, and it's a left narrative. There's a reason the Living Wage Foundation exists. The legal government wage has been and will continue to be far short of what Britons need. Even with this pay bump, millions of workers in the UK will earn £1,000 less than they need to cover basic life necessities. While some may be able to cover some basics with this money, that surely won't be enough to meet other expenses needed to live a dignified life.
The right narrative spin from The Telegraph. While no one is against people getting paid more, the government must also consider recent economic trends and challenges to businesses. A full-time worker's income rate has already grown sharply over the past decade, as we have yet to see the impact of recent cost hikes on businesses. Another rapid increase will likely force companies to offer shorter hours, thus hurting the workers this is meant to help.
Narrative C comes from Sky News. The UK is right to lift the currently insufficient minimum wage, but it should do so equally for workers of all ages. There's no reason teenagers, who often work to provide for their families just like anyone else, should earn less than someone aged 18 to 20 or 21 to 23. Young employees at the bottom of the pay scale are struggling just to put food in the fridge and a roof over their heads. This arbitrary pay structure should be abolished.
And a nerd narrative from Metaculus, there's a 50% chance that the U.S. federal minimum wage will be raised by December 2026.
Thanks for listening to the Verity Podcast for Wednesday, April 3rd, 2024.
Each day, we use machine learning to read about 5,000 articles from about 100 newspapers and figure out which ones are about the same stories. For each major story, our editorial team then extracts both the key facts that all articles agree on and the key narratives where the articles differ.
Find out more at Verity.news and download the Verity app on the Apple App Store or Google Play. For Scott Wallace, I'm Eric Steiner, inviting you to join us next time on the Verity Podcast.